Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
James Holland, the historian's new book is Brothers in Arms, One Legendary Tank Regiment's Bloody War from D-Day to VE Day. The Normandy campaign is a great success, sweeping over northern France. But the chase now, as the Germans keep falling back to Belgium and then to Germany, and the Sherwood Ranger Yeomanry is on the chase, moving more in a day than they've moved in weeks in Normandy. It is now the autumn of 1944, and the ranks are always being filled by reinforcements. And James, I think it's a good time to talk about the long tail and how it is that all these casualties don't knock the Sherwood Rangers out of the war. What is the long tail and why is it part of the big war concept being practiced?
Yeah, well, it's just a huge support in terms of maintenance supply. And, you know, they have tank crews being trained constantly over in the UK, and they're just coming in and they're just sort of funneled in. But, you know, a tank regiment like the Sherwood Rangers is about 688 men, of which only about 329 are actually in tanks. The rest of them are in what's called the A echelon and the B echelon, which is the support behind it. So this is trucks and half tracks and what have you, bringing up supplies, and it's the armored recovery vehicles. So, you know, at the end of the day, if a tank's been left on the battlefield but it hasn't been completely knocked out, they'll beetle around and whisk it back and change an engine or repair the tracks or whatever, and it'll be good to go the next day. And that's it's just extraordinary. I mean, obviously, after something as long as you know, sort of 300 miles up into Belgium in kind of no time at all, the maintenance required on a lot of the tanks is quite extreme. But what's amazing about it is just how quickly the regiment is good to go again and fully functioning. And that's all down to the kind of the long tail, this sort of what I call big war, this concept of huge logistical support, which both the British and the Americans and of course, by association, the Canadians too, are extremely good at. I mean, there's no one to touch them really in the Second World War.
Stanley Christopherson is now commanding the regiment. In 10 weeks, he's lost, my notes here, James, 44 officers and 175 of all ranks, all replaced by the long tail. And they are now flying across France. It wears down the Shermans, but they enjoy it. I want to mention the rec troop as well, the reconnaissance troop. What tanks do they drive?
So they're in Stuart tanks. So these are little sort of these are smaller four crew tanks, also American built. We christened them. They were called, the official British name was the Stuart. British called all American tanks after U.S. Civil War generals. But the British crews themselves called it the Honey because it just run like a little sweet honey. That was the idea. It was such a good little runner. And these were kind of a part of a recce troop of 11 tanks, 44 crew.
And they fly across the coast, the landscape of France, past the World War I battlefields. They're headed now into Belgium. But we need to introduce a few personalities because they're extremely colorful, as you say, James. I mean, this is the National Guard. The 4th Baron Ley of Stoneleigh. Who is he?
Well, yeah, he takes over as second in command. So basically, they're running a bit short and back over in the UK getting ready for deployment of the Gloucester Hussars. And the Gloucester Hussars are all split up and whole squadrons are moved into the Sherwood Rangers. But one of the sort of quid pro quos for breaking up the Gloucester Hussars is that Baron Major the Lord Ley becomes Stanley Christopherson's second in command. And this is actually a little bit of a blow for Stanley, because Stanley's kind of soulmate in the regiment is a guy called Stephen Mitchell, who's, you know, they've been thick as thieves ever since they go off to war in off to Palestine on their horses back in January 1940. And they've been best of friends ever since. And so Stephen is his kind of sort of his best chum, his best pal at regimental headquarters and second in command. But he has to kind of make way for the Baron. And the Baron is a kind of slightly eccentric character and doesn't say a huge amount and is very kind of red of face and small of stature. And Stanley gets on with him just fine, but they're never soulmates.
You have a scene that is vivid, and I want to detail it. When they're racing across France, they cross the path of the retreating Germans, all dead now, with the horses all dead. This is the Falaise Pocket. It was it was closed on by the Canadians and by Allied air. And both Christofferson and the Baron get out of their tanks and stare at the horror, both puffing on their pipes as fast as possible and attempting to control themselves because they're so overwhelmed. It's a very vivid scene, James.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, that's right at the end of the Normandy campaign, and they're all desperate, fleeing German armies, desperate trying to get us across this very kind of narrow ford and bridges on the River Dive. And they're sort of canalized. And so the Allied artillery combined with the rocket firing Typhoons of the RAF are able to just absolutely, you know, they're sitting ducks. And so there's just this appalling carnage of burnt out vehicles, dead horses, dead men, flies everywhere. You know, it's late summer, it's hot, and they get pretty ripe pretty quickly. And you can imagine sort of coming on the scene a few days later. I mean, it must have been absolutely shattering, really. And as you say, Stanley and Lord and the Baron puffing on their pipes furiously to try and kind of take away the smell of the rotting corpses and rotting dead animals, and trying to sort of keep a grip of themselves. But I don't know quite how you do in those circumstances, really.
And that illustrated to me what Leslie Skinner has volunteered to do. He doesn't want them to see that. And Leslie Skinner, in his notes, you make note of the fact that he's sick. He gets sick afterwards, often in the middle of the night because of what he's seen.
Well, yes, absolutely. And we were talking about the crossing of the River Nuoro. He froze up multiple times, having to bury the dead from the Nuoro battle. And he notes this very matter-of-factly in his diary, just as Les was sick and was then sick again, you know, stench appalling. Found my billet that, you know, went to bed that night feeling very kind of very low in spirits. And crikey, you know, who can blame him?
Let's get into another gunfight. Giel. Giel is where C Squadron, led by my notes, James, correct me if I get it wrong, Jack Holman commands a Giel, and it's what was a well laid out town. And James's book has maps and photographs from the air, reconnaissance air of the period in the front of it. So you can follow these events. This is early September 44. And Jack Holman, thinking the town, they can capture the town, wanders into, is it a trap or does it just come upon him that the Germans are reinforcing?
No, they've got to get across the Albert Canal and they've got to, and then push on through this town of Giel. And B Squadron and C Squadron are the two parts of the Sherwood Rangers that were sent forward first with the Durham Brigade. So there's different infantry battalions of the Durhams. And B Squadron is on the right hand flank, and they have a fight sort of southeast of the town of Giel. But C Squadron just push on up this road, and unbeknown to them, just as they're moving into the kind of market square in the middle of the town, a company of Jag Panthers, which are self propelled guns, so they're fixed turrets, but with the 88mm gun based on a Panther tank chassis, arrive just at the north of the town. And one troop of Shermans is completely from C Squadron is completely knocked out. And what happens is that the Jack Holman C Squadron are based in the middle of Giel, and the Germans counterattack, and they're kind of stuck there. They're completely surrounded, and they're holding out fine, but they're running low on ammo. And so this guy called George Stanton, who is one of the he's in charge of the armored recovery vehicles, does a run from Sherwood Rangers headquarters and supply, you know, from the echelons, the far side of the Albert Canal to the south, and does this run in the middle of the night up through straight through the German lines into the center of town, resupplies C Squadron with more ammunition and food and whatnot, so they're better able to defend themselves. And they then pull back the following day to sort of consolidate their situation before pushing forward again and eventually winning the day, which is what they do.
The book is
it's an amazing engagement. And, you know, accounts of that night, you know, everyone kind of incredibly tense, knowing that they might not, that, you know, that they're likely to run out of ammunition, will have to surrender if they don't get any resupply through, and then Stanton turning up and, you know, not knowing what's around the next corner and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's all very, very tense, but, you know, they're told to hold that position, and that's what they do. You know, they don't, there's no retreats.
Brothers in Arms is the book. James Holland is the historian. We're on to winter 1944-45. I'm Tom Batchelor.